For an even better way to listen to Football Weekly at home, at work or on the go, head to soundcloud.com/Guardian Football Weekly or download the SoundCloud app for Android and iPhone.
Football Weekly with James Richardson.
It was a fabulous and much needed week off, but for you, Pod, the holiday is now over. As Diva stops throwing, AC Jimbo storms back from the slopes, breaks into Pod office, takes down pictures of Dave Farrar, throws out box of love letters, Mark Belinda, and says, football, woof. Today, Michael Laudrup hands off, we saw him first. Milan Derby, Bex in Paris, City Chelsea, why Barry can't have a quiet afternoon of football, post tweets, and much, much more in Football Weekly. Right then, here we go, everybody. Barry.
Hello.
Hi, Barry. Paul McInnes.
Hiya.
Hi, Paul.
Hey. What's that sound like?
Kind You're of fighting like fire with fire.
Supermarket checkout. Yeah.
Does it?
Yeah. What's kind of friendly voice.
All right.
Welcoming.
Hey. And welcome to you, James Horncastle.
Hello.
Hi, James. How are you all doing?
Splendid.
Barry, you were talking to a somewhat dejected Max Rushton earlier, is that right?
That's correct. He's quite upset that Dave Farrow appears to have been very popular with
our
listeners.
He's upset. He's upset.
How was your skiing holiday, by the way?
It was fine.
Yeah?
It was fine. Do you have a nice weekend, Barry?
I had a busy weekend.
You went to Norwich?
I did, yeah.
Did you fly?
No, I got the train.
It's a bit old school.
Were there engineering works at Ingatestone?
No, there were no engineering works. It was only 2 hours on the train. I left my house at 9:30 in the morning and got back at 10:30 that night. So it was a 13-hour day to cover a 90-minute football match.
Right, but what a 90 minutes, particularly the five or six at the end, eh?
Yeah, I seem to have a habit of getting matches like this where there are two-goal turnarounds or three-goal turnarounds, indeed, in the last couple of minutes. And it was all made worse this weekend by there was gremlins in the system at The Guardian, which meant I had to write the match as a runner, which means...
What does that mean?
It means you file the middle bit at half time, then on the 75th minute you file another chunk, and then on the final whistle, which was blown about 1 second after Grant Holt had scored the winner for Norwich,
so
you have to write the first paragraph and the last paragraph.
Does it read like one? You remember when you used to do that game where you'd write one line, then hand it to the person on the next, and you'd turn the paper over?
A bit like that.
Like consequences.
So I would like to apologise to anyone who read the first edition of The Observer this weekend.
All right. If only you'd had a nice, easy game like the Capital One Cup at Wembley. By League.
That would have been perfect because you could have pretty much had your match report finished by half time.
Right. What would it have said, Paul McInnes?
Well, I would probably defer to the tactical supremas in the room. But
you didn't see the game, did you?
I did. Ah. I did actually see it. But I kind of thought really what happened was there was just a massive 4-league difference between the two teams. And that Swansea, unlike opposition earlier in the competition, perhaps like Arsenal, were really up for it, had a game plan. Knew that they needed to be confident in possession. As long as they did that, then there was only a limited way in which Bradford could harm them. And Michu's goal was superb.
It certainly was. Bradford City corner, 0 shots on target, 0 shots off target, 0 possession, 26%. But it wasn't about the numbers, was it? It was more of a celebration of fans, of footballing spirit, James, etc., etc., etc.
Yeah, it's the taking part that counts.
Yes.
No. But yeah, it was fantastic. I mean, the probably the biggest roar of the afternoon was when they got a corner in the 86th minute. That was celebrated probably louder than a goal was.
Says here they didn't get any corners. My stats are wrong.
No, I think they did on the 86th.
That's the sort of thing AVB is warning us about, isn't it?
He doesn't like stats, apparently.
No, he's right.
Yeah.
He's right. But yeah, some terrific the Michu goal.
Yeah, I mean, it started with Ben Davies playing like a 70-yard cross-field ball, and then Nathan Dyer taking it down silky, and then being switched back again. Hernandez feeding it through to Michu, who then just dummies the centre-half, opens his legs accommodatingly, and then the ball's pinged into the far post.
Mm.
It just a flexibility, a dexterity, and just kind of that lethal touch which Laudrup's brought to the team this season.
Has he brought in the theme? We'll get onto that question in a second, but you did mention Nathan Dyer, which brings us on to the big clash of the afternoon, which wasn't so much Swansea Bradford as Nathan Dyer, Jonathan de Guzman.
Yeah, I like the way they went to meet you for arbitrage.
Did he not introduce himself into the issue?
Well, they kind of, Guzman turns around and goes, points at him, like, it's like, what do you think? And then the guy who's about twice the size of both of them wanders over and goes, well, I think you're the designated penalty taker, you should take it.
But apparently he wasn't the designated penalty taker. There was no designated penalty taker.
That might be true, or maybe
Michael Laudrup, in his saintliness, was just trying to diffuse the situation.
Well, that's possible, but hats off to him anyway for increasing what was already a comical moment by removing Nathan Dyer and sending on someone else instead of him, so to make sure that he couldn't get his hat trick. I thought it was poor form by Nathan Dyer, to be honest. He wanted to make the occasion all about him. He wanted to score a hat-trick, and now he kind of has made it all about him, because when his grandchildren are watching that, they're going to go, "What on earth were you doing, Grandpa?" You
know. The celebration for the first goal, to turn his shirt around so he had name and number in front and then just point at it. And we've got used to watching finals in recent years where people reveal T-shirts with tributes. You know, I think Chico Flores afterwards had one to... a typical sort of Iniesta one, which was to Danny Harke and everyone like that. And it was just disgraceful, like disgracefully self-absorbed. But, you know, I hear people saying, "Oh, well, you don't understand. You've never played the game. Of course he wanted a hat-trick." But, I mean, come on, share it around.
What about all this Laudrup love? You're saying he's brought that to the team. Was this not what we were saying about Brendan Rodgers last year and Roberto Martinez before him?
I don't think so. I mean, I think you watched Rodgers' team and it was pretty on the eye, but it was quite slow.
Mm.
And there was, you know, you'd have 800 passes in your own half before somebody, probably Joe Allen, dared to cross that halfway line. This time they are willing to play 60-yard passes if the opportunity is there.
Mm. Surely, if he was a really special manager, he would have tossed his medal into the crowd and slunk off to take a really fat contract somewhere else.
But that's, yes, don't you do it after two seasons? You win the Capital One Cup and then you win the FA Cup next season.
Right.
I think there's kind of a Swansea template, isn't there? And if one sort of component is removed, then a like-for-like replacement is sourced and put in. Whether that's as managers or players, they have some quite ordinary players who are very... fit into the Swansea system very well, and at the risk of sounding like Jonathan Wilson, it's kind of like Dynamo Kiev under his hero Lobanovsky.
Right.
You know, it'll be interesting to see how these players fare when they go elsewhere. Joe Allen's doing okay at Liverpool. What's his name at Sunderland? The striker.
I have to say, this doesn't sound anything like Danny Jonathan Gray. Wilson to me. Jonathan Wilson is getting it.
Well, I name-checked Valery Lobanovsky's Dynamo Kiev.
Do you have a lob on for Lobanovsky as well?
Lobanovsky.
not quite. But Danny Graham, that's on is too early to say, but so far, you know, he has yet to impress, really.
All right, OK. Enough on the League Cup. Well done, Bradford. Well done, Swansea.
Well, it's I think it's just a little bit... I came away from that game thinking, oh, it wasn't quite the fairy tale you want. Mm. You did want Bradford to win, and we're
too many Davids, not enough Goliaths. That was one interpretation.
Yeah,
it's still a fairy tale in some respects, because it's Swansea's first major trophy in a century. They're in League Two as recently as 2005. There's still members of that team: Gary Monk, Ashley Williams, who were there when they were in League Two. So,
in fact, the sight of them giving the guard of honour to players who are, you know, back where they were, was something very special.
Yeah, and I think Laudrup was very magnanimous at the end to say, we were a small part of the fairy tale, Bradford were a big part. But I still think it's still a fairy tale cup final win for Swansea, to be honest. Because going back to Laudrup, I mean, he's won a trophy in 8 months of being in England, whereas, you know, you look at Wenger, it's 8 years. Moyes, who's got a lot of credit, has yet to win a trophy at Everton. You know, it could have been them. You've still got to give him some credit for.
Can I take it back? It's a beautiful fairy tale.
All right, there you go. Well then, League Cup tick, League unticked box. Barry. Now got United 1. So did City. So there's still a large number of points between them at the top. But that 2-0 victory over Chelsea, Well, first of all, pal, did that ball stay hit from Tevez?
Yeah, some real pearlers this weekend, weren't there?
There were. And Mancini's been calling out his players again. I see, while I was away, he took the opportunity to have a pop at Sami Nasri. Poor old Sami Nasri.
It was a well-earned pop, I think. Nasri's been very poor this season. That time he ducked out of the wall remains. That was just shameful. And I said at the time, if I was his manager... and a player did that, he would never play for me again. I think Mancini should have possibly taken my advice, and maybe he'll listen next time.
not be the last time you'll say that, I'm
Has
sure.
Has Samir Nasri ever been not like that, though?
How do you mean?
A surrender monkey.
Yeah, and you know, flattering to deceive flair player.
Well, he had that very consistent, was it his final season at Arsenal?
Week.
But no, he's just a despicable character, really, isn't
right.
he?
I think you're really calling out the players, aren't you? We've had Nathan Dyer and Samir Nasri. Who else don't you like? Who's your least favourite footballer in the game?
Nasri ranks fairly high.
Really?
Yeah, well,
who's your favourite then?
Who's my favourite?
You know, simpatico, antipatico here. Mine's Christian Kivu on the antipatico front, by the way.
Really?
I'll just throw that out there. Don't like Christian Kivu.
What's
right,
he
okay.
done to you?
I don't know. Maybe it's that helmet that he wears so clearly without needing to that he doesn't bother doing it up.
Because he fractured his skull once.
Well, yeah, then do your helmet up if it's a health and safety issue. Barry, who's your least and most favourite player?
Oh, God, it's a tough one to spring on me. That mm-hmm. I used to really, really loathe Pippo Inzaghi.
Really?
Yeah. And then I think through exposure to you, I kind of warmed to him a bit.
I know who your favourite is. Kevin Davies.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Or Kevin Kilbane.
What about Cavani?
Oh, really?
What happened to Cavani?
Who, by the way, listens to us? We were talking about this while you were away.
Yep.
So anyway.
Paul?
I'm trying to think, because I kind of really... I've had real strong feelings against Manchester United for a lot of my life, but I can't pin it down to one individual guy.
Really?
And actually, when I think about the individual guys, I quite like them.
Try
even
Nani.
Like Vidic.
There you go. Lots of people don't like Nani.
Yeah, but I watched him in the FA Cup last week. I thought, cool, that boy. Whoa. Maybe I'm in the closet about United.
Perhaps you are. Do you know what? It's very negative to sit around here talking about players we don't like. When there's so many players we could like. For example, Yaya Toure, back and very much banging now with that opener against Chelsea.
Yeah, and Gary Neville had called him out.
Did he?
To go back negative, yeah.
Yeah.
Saying, you know, how he hadn't performed to the standard that he had last year where he was... swept all before him. But it was quite... Mancini played him further forward from the start rather than in sort of a holding role. And, he got his just reward, really.
Brilliant. What does this mean for Chelsea? By now, have we reached the point where Chelsea just aren't going to get any better under Benitez?
Well, the observations were being made on the highlight show last night that watching the response to the penalty kick and who was following in and who wasn't. But if the players stop playing for Rafa, if they kind of think, well, there's a new coach coming in and we don't like him anyway, and JT's... John Terry!
back up. Yeah.
Can I, sorry, United fans. John Terry.
Really?
Yeah, so... But
can I admit a sneaking regard for him?
Yeah.
Even though he's a rascal.
You can, but nobody will believe you.
Really? Okay. Anyway, Paul.
Yeah, so if they don't play, you know, there is a real possibility, because I still really like AVB Spurs, and, you know, West Ham may well prove me wrong tonight, but, and, you know, Arsenal have the form. They're the Wigan of the qualifying for the Champions League. So if Chelsea could readily slip out of that top four, and it would be quite interesting to see what happens if they do.
Great shout on the Wigan of the qualifying for the Champions League, though.
Thanks, man.
Mm. They'll appreciate that.
Yeah. they've got Borough in the FA Cup on Wednesday. And, of course, they're still up in the Europa League after their late goal. Was it Sparta Prague Thursday night?
Yeah.
From that man, Eden Hazard. But, yes, Chelsea.
But no, I was just going to agree with Paul. I think they're likely contenders to slip out of the top four.
Right. Well, at the moment, you've got three teams within 2 points. Chelsea, of course, in pole position. Then Spurs, who are playing this evening, so they have a chance to really shatter that little tight-knit group of competitors. Who are they playing? West Ham.
No way. Which is not an easy game.
But. Well, big game. They beat Lyon. Talking about Europa League, they beat Lyon. Arsenal, are they as rubs as ever, despite the fact that they narrowly edged a win against Aston Villa?
But they have this knack of, like, whenever there's a crisis which really risks precipitating into something terrible, they...
What's beyond crisis?
Well, yeah, that's what I was thinking, but...
Apocalyptic meltdown.
All right.
Dystopian nightmare.
They get a win that kind of just about salves everything, doesn't it? Because, maybe keeps people's hopes sort of, you know, oh, maybe it's not that bad.
Well, do you know what? Here's an interesting tweet from John Foote. He says, Arsenal terrible season, rubbish, 47 points. Spurs fantastic season, brilliant, 48 points. So, you know, it's all about perspective, I guess, in that sense. If it's a results game, that was a win for them. But the performance was as bad as it was against Bayern, arguably, or not?
Yeah, I mean, defensively they look a shambles, and they don't. Structurally, the team doesn't. They appear to have three midfielders who all want to play in the same position and can't hold any discipline, and then, you know, allowed Villa opportunity on the counter-attack. That said, they had loads of chances in the game, and if Giroud had been a little bit sharper in and around the box, they would have won quite comfortably.
There was a very interesting moment in that game when Aston Villa scored, and they scored on the break while Arsenal had a corner, and Steve Bould was sitting beside Wenger, and Wenger got up to, you know, be upset that Arsenal had scored a goal, and Bould could quite clearly be seen saying to himself, like, while shaking his head disconsolately, "How many times do I have to tell you?" So I'm not sure what it is he felt he had to tell Arsene Wenger a lot, but Arsene clearly isn't listening to him.
Clearly isn't listening. Well, should we finish off part one with the other erstwhile contender for top four status? Remember all those weeks ago when people were talking about Dave Moyes' boys as possibly edging a Champions League spot again? Where are they now? Where?
They are sixth, 42 points, and they are 6 points off fourth
six place. 6 points. What happened at Carrow Road? Hey, you were there, Barry.
I was there, yeah.
Were you able, when you're writing, how difficult is it to keep an eye on the game when you're writing?
It depends on how the game is going.
Right.
I generally tend to do a lot of my writing at half-time.
Right, but that lasts else, 6 minutes.
Yeah, it's difficult, it's stressful if goals are going in.
Which they were in this last 6 minutes.
Yeah, but you do have a monitor where you can, you know, check things.
Oh, okay.
if your head down is down and you're typing.
Paul.
Massive.
Yeah.
Yeah, massive.
Were you,
massive.
You being Norwich,
yes,
had collectively scored one goal in your last six games and you 1-0 down in the 84th minute.
And everybody was slightly starting to give up, I think.
Right.
And, that said, people have been lambasting Houghton all the time, despite the fact that we've never been in the relegation zone and we've got a very thin squad that we've never spent any money on. And one of the reasons they lambast him is for not making early substitutions, but he did make an early substitution, bringing on Kay Kamara. And I think he did change the game. He was Barry's man of the match.
Completely changed the game, yeah.
And he brought pace and strength to our front line, which pace particularly is something we lack a bit of. But we just had the confidence running down. And you see this guy come in, leap like the proverbial salmon, not one in, and then all of a sudden we find the spirit of Lambert again and we push on for the last 10 and score that winner.
He's on loan from Sporting Kansas City.
That's right.
Is there a team unsporting Kansas City?
Not that I'm aware of.
All right.
Apparently, last season, he was one of the worst-paid players in MLS.
Really?
And he's from Sierra Leone originally and left as a boy and has a foundation in the States to raise money to help kids in Sierra Leone. But he was mightily impressive. Sort of a touch of the Drogba's or Romano Lukaku's about him. He scored a goal, helped set up a second. I'm not sure whether it was him or Bassong or the pair of them between them, and had the knockdown for Grant Holt to stab home from a yard out. But David Moyes didn't do himself any favours. He picked Stephen Naismith to play in the right wing instead of Kevin Morales, which is a strange decision. I mean, this guy, Mark Talentire, works down the sports section. He's an Everton fan, and he described Stephen Naismith to me yesterday as a junkyard dog that no one knows what to do with. You know, that's how he described his style. And he withdrew Nikita Jelovic, brought on a midfielder, in an attempt to close out the game when they were 1-0 up, and Everton aren't good enough to do that. And they've repeatedly thrown away leads this season and did it again on Saturday. And Moyes was very chippy afterwards. And
he withdrew his hand from a
Yeah, he went to shake Lee Mason's hand, Lee Mason being the referee. He went to shake his hand, and then when Lee Mason went to reciprocate, pulled his hand away and started remonstrating with him, because he thought Mason had added on too much injury time, which I think is clutching at straws. You know, you play as long as you're meant to play, and if your defenders, if Marouane Fellaini is incapable of marking his man at set pieces, then, you know, that's where your big finger of blame should be pointing.
Right.
Or point at his own ill-advised substitutions. Don't blame the ref for adding on 24 seconds he possibly shouldn't have.
Absolutely. Let's kick over that David Moyes statue. Here's Jay Stafford, who says, Everton better without Moyes, sheer negativity in substitutions and in interviews.
I think it's rubbish.
Really?
That's just surely just rubbish.
Who, David Moyes?
No.
Other comments?
Fans kind of having a pop. It was the thread on the Guardian report was all Everton fans going, get rid of Moyes. Moyes, you kind of dilly-dallying over this new contract. So he's got a tiny, minuscule budget compared to the teams. He's in the top half of the table, never mind the top four. And he's competed more or less every season with that top six.
Mm.
But I don't think it's unfair to say that he does play very negatively. Like Nikita Jelovic is an out and out sort of number nine. I don't think he wears number nine, but he is a number nine, you know. And on Saturday he was linking up play from midfield. He was drifting out to the flanks. At one stage he put in a cross to Naismith. It should be the other way around, you know.
Because I mean, one of the things I guess they're suffering from is Jelovic is on quite the drought. I think he's only scored two in 20 games, having previously scored 20 in his first 21. So that, yeah, he seemed to solve that time-old Everton have a problem scoring goals, and now he's not scoring.
Right.
And, back to the money again. You know, that was £7 million on Jelovic, and they had to take a calculated gamble on it.
In January, they did do that deal for Leroy Fer, didn't they, which broke down because he didn't complete a medical. So it's tricky.
Mm. But Jelovic, he can't score if he's out in the touchline or 30 yards away or 40 yards away from the goal. He should be in the box, sort of Van Persie style.
The reason why he was such a success when he first joined was, you know, he'd score with his first touch in the box, wouldn't he? If he's not in the box, like if he's just a poacher rather than an all-round link-up man, which apparently he's obviously got this skill, then, you know, maybe he should be told not to do that and just be in the penalty area and do what he does.
Everton are said to have the best left side in the league, but two, you know, one amazing crosser of the ball in Leighton Baines, and another great one who can also cut inside and play interchanges. And Jelovic is still not feeding off of that and not scoring.
I wanted to raise this issue with Moyes after the game, but he was so angry and he's so scary. Look, I bottled it. I just totally bottled it.
And what did you say instead?
I said, "What can you, as a manager, do to try and get Nikita Jelovic back amongst the goals again?"
Right.
But I was just, I totally bottled it. I'm ashamed of myself for when he answered the question, you know, well, why don't you just play him as an out-and-out striker rather than having him fannying around on the fringes of the final third? And
that would have made some great television.
Well, it wouldn't have been on television, but I probably wouldn't be here today. I'd be in the A&E unit of Norwich General Hospital.
Barry, any other thoughts on the Carrow Road experience?
Well, I was slightly disappointed. There's two things, actually. Slightly disappointed by the food on offer in the press room. I thought with Delia Smith being the chairperson that it would be slap up for you. Got baked potato with chilli, which was a bit poor, I thought.
Was it you were expecting there to be finger food and plenty of it, or not?
She doesn't slip in behind the stove before match day.
Well, funnily enough, the lady, the nice lady serving the food, looked really like Delia Smith.
Maybe they've been close.
But it wasn't her, but she looks so like her, I thought.
You know what they say about Norwich.
There is that. And then after the game, I had like 40 minutes to kill between leaving the stadium and getting the train, so I said, I'll go for a pint. So the Premier Inn was the nearest place to the train station, so I went in. There was a load of Everton fans in there singing a very raucous and slightly obscene song in praise of Peter Reid. And they got briefly kettled by a gang of five bouncers who said they'd have to stop singing or leave. So they just continued singing, finished their pints and left of their own accord before they got thrown out.
Excellent.
Scousers 1, Norwich 0.
Yeah.
Mm. All right then. Now, almost as atmospheric was the scene Sunday night at the San Siro, James Horncastle, in the Milan derby. Yes. All right. Let's talk about the extraordinary atmosphere.
Yeah. No, it was obviously it was Balotelli's first derby since his move to Milan.
Yep.
Obviously former Inter player.
Yes.
He got I wouldn't say a hostile reception. I think that both presidents had claimed, you know, had wanted them to be not overstep the line.
Yeah. There was a little bit of overstepping though. Not a huge amount, but there was some. There was
I think an
inflatable banana.
Apparently one Inter fan held up an inflatable banana and he shushed him. And then when he was coming off the pitch towards the end of the game, they were giving him the bird and he grabbed his junk, so to speak. Which is a bit of a bad gesture, right, apparently. But apart from that, he behaved himself impeccably.
He did. I mean, the Inter fans wasn't quite as impeccable as we'd hoped. Some of the banners were terrific. I have to say, I think the Milanisti edged it. They had one, they're red like the fire, black like your fear, I think was a bit of a Balotelli reference, was
it? Yeah, it was.
And the one of...
Ned Flanders.
Yeah, Inter dressed up as Ned Flanders. Fantastic. Anyway, there you go. Oh, they had another one. We weren't scared of the flea, so no problem with the lice. The flea being messy.
Yeah.
You see, so... Yeah, okay, good. The game itself, the Gazetta's headline, the Derby doesn't vote a winner, because, of course, this game was seen as very significant in the context of the Italian elections.
Yeah, you could say that because Inter came back to draw after initially going behind to a very good El Shaarawy goal.
Right. He's good, isn't he?
That was his 19th goal of the season. I think because now the spotlight is very much on Balotelli, it kind of takes away from what a remarkable campaign El Shaarawy's had, because if they are where they are now, in probably the favourites to qualify for the Champions League, it's down to him. Because Milan at the start of the season, I think they had 7 points from their first 8 games. They're only outside the relegation zone on goal difference. And all of a sudden, I think if the season had started in October, they would be top of the league by 4 or 5 points. And I think that's a lot down to El Shaarawy. So he scored his first Derby goal.
Great goal as well.
A superb sort of...
It needed something special to beat Handanovic in the Inter goal.
Who was the man who thwarted Balotelli. I think it was Handanovic 4, Balotelli 0. Right after El Shaarawy's goal, there was a corner, an El Shaarawy corner, which Balotelli headed from pretty much point-blank range. And Handanovic did well to parry that. He came out and took not a boot in the face from Balotelli. Very brave intervention, saved one of his free kicks. Now, he was exceptional. I think Inter have been quite poor for the last couple of months, really since they beat Juventus at the Juventus Stadium. But if they, like Milan are where they are because of El Shaarawy, they're probably still around the Champions League places because of Handanovic keeping them in games.
Is he the one decent signing that Marco Branca's made there?
Well, no, you could say he'd made a few before that in Eto, Schneider.
All right, yeah.
Recent years. He's had a number of flopped transfer windows. They're just fine. I mean, you could say Julio Cesar is still a very good goalkeeper. I mean, he's had a lot to do at Loftus Road, but I think they were justified in signing Handanovic. He's more than lived up to their billing, probably been their best player this season.
All right, well, Inter anyway equalised through Ezequiel Schelotto, which was very exciting.
It was thoroughly against the run of play.
It was.
I mean, Milan must be absolutely furious at throwing 2 points away.
The first half
they should have won at their leisure, really.
Mm. But the second half did seem to come back into it.
Yeah, I think Milan tired after an hour or so, which is kind of understandable after...
Except that Inter played on Thursday night.
Yeah, but it was a route. It was quite an easy victory for them against Cluj. I know there's distance. I think it was. You could say that facing Barcelona at home, the intensity of that is more difficult than going away to just slam Cluj.
But anyway, you're saying, so Milan looking very much the likeliest team to finish third and grab that Champions League spot, because Alessio Di Maria was tweeting in asking that very question. Currently the situation is Napoli in second place, 51 points with a game in hand. They are 7 points behind Juventus.
They play Napoli on Friday.
Right, they play each other on Friday, but they're playing tonight, Napoli, against Udinese Monday night. It's all very complicated. But yeah, that Napoli-Juventus game on Friday is huge.
Absolutely, because I think if there is to be a title race and Juventus not to run away with it, then they have to beat Napoli. Have to beat Juve at San Paolo on Friday, because otherwise it just risks getting away from them.
Right. As regards the battle for third place, then you've got Milan, Inter, and Lazio all within 1 point of each other. So and Lazio have a game in hand as well. Fiorentina in there as well. How about Catania? Catania could end up in the Champions League.
Yeah, I mean, they were a revelation last year. They could have qualified for the Europa League, but seemed to tail off when they'd already got their record points total in Serie A. But they're kind of a bit like Swansea, and they have a core of Argentine rather than Spanish players. They replace the coach every year, but they've got a sort of established way of playing, and they've been proving year on year. Whereas Palermo, they're obviously rivals, sacked their manager again.
Great shout. Nice little segue. This weekend saw Palermo taking on Genoa. They were both on their third manager of the season. It was a 0-0 draw. Palermo responded by moving on to their fourth, or should I say their second manager of the season, because they got rid of Alberto Malassani, who 19 days before had replaced their second manager of the season, then brought him back in, second manager of the season, who is Giampiero Gasperini.
Yeah, I feel a bit sorry for Malassani because he'd been in the job for 19 days, which still isn't the quickest dismissal by Zamperini. He dismissed Roberto Pruzzo after 24 hours back in, I think, 2002. So, but it was his 50th coaching change of his career, Zamperini. So,
in how many years? About 24, is it, or something like that?
Yeah, I think he had 26 at Venezia and 24 at Palermo.
Right, so, managerial changes.
Yeah. So quite harsh on Malassani, you know, obviously been in charge for three games and not lost a game and still lost his job. But that's how things are at Palermo.
Certainly is. Crazy. Boohoo Mill says, does James Horncastle know anything about the rumours of Zdenek Zeman being lined up to be the new manager of Coventry City? There has been a groundswell of support, says Boohoo Mill, amongst fans since it was first rumoured. You heard this one?
No, I haven't heard that. I think a lot of people think he's suited to lower division football because his methods are, they're spectacular, they're entertaining, but they're a bit outmoded, a bit outdated for the highest level. So one of the reasons why people thought he had success at Pescara was because in Serie B, it's not everyone's pro-zoning it up, so to speak. But I'm not entirely sure whether he would go to Coventry.
To Coventry, right. Interesting, that one. Swindon, that's another place he could go. They like Italian managers down there.
Yeah.
Maybe he could break into the market down there, because there's a lot of Italian managers breaking in at Swindon.
Yeah, Swindon made it sound like he'd sort of a robbery, and he insisted that he was only taking his own stuff.
Right.
But I don't really know or care what the of the story is.
It's quite interesting what happens to him next, because I don't know, does he go back to Italy? I don't think the Lazio job will be available anytime soon, or Letizia would appoint him. Some people were saying, would he maybe go to Leeds, because they're considering a coaching change with Warnock, which, if you think of Di Canio on the bench, El Hadj Diouf, Michael Brown. Incredible sort of...
Quite a heady cocktail of positivity there. Right. Now, big Sunday in football, because, of course, in France you had... Is it Le Classique or La, James Horncastle?
Could be either. It's,
I think it's a Le, isn't it?
It couldn't
it's a
be.
Manly affair.
I think it's Le.
Le Classique.
Yeah.
Le Classique.
Le.
Le. Paul McInnes.
Yeah.
Get in.
Yeah, I was watching because there's the amazing commentator on it, who I'm really big fan of.
Dave Farrar.
And, I was not having watched much French football this season, I have to confess. I was quite impressed by the individual talent on display. Because you read a lot about how all the good players in Ligue 1 are now playing for Newcastle. And then you look and you see kind of like Lucas Moura and Javier Pastore and little Valbuena. And that the Barton character, who I thought was very good in the centre of midfield.
Le Barton.
Yes, definitely not a lap.
Right, well, here's a stat for you. David Beckham conceded as many fouls in his 14-minute appearance for PSG as Joey Barton did in the entire 90.
He also, Barton was great. He was really up and at him, and his distribution was pretty strong as well. Beckham was funny because he came on and every minute was a little Hollywood pass, and then he did contribute towards the second goal.
It was a nice little dink over the top, wasn't it?
Dinked it over the top, and Menez got on and then kind of just hammered it against Ibra's knee.
And then what happened?
He jumped right on the back of Ibra and got right in the photograph, and it's all like next day's back pages, Beckham right there.
Must have learned that from Rio Ferdinand.
Or from Gerard Piquet.
Or from David May.
Oh, come on, my joke was better. What's happened? Right, well, anyway, a 2-0 win for PSG, who are very much the leaders, in Ligue 1. Yeah. And there you go. Now, lower down our pecking order this week than even Ligue 1 is the Liga in Spain. And Sid Lowe will be telling us all about that after this.
Hello, James.
Hi, Sid. How's everything there in Liga land?
All right, thank you. How are you?
Yeah, ever so well. Thanks for asking. James Horncastle, Paul McInnes, Barry, they're all well as well. I tell you what we want to know, Sid, yep. Are we on the verge of 8 days that could rock the Spanish season?
Well, yeah, definitely. Good. I mean, there are 8 decisive days for both Real Madrid and Barcelona. Well, maybe not 8 days for Barcelona, because theirs gets obviously extended into the following week. 8 days for Real Madrid, which I think will define not just the season, but probably to some extent define the legacy of Mourinho at the club. Ooh. And also define the way in which he creates an exit strategy. Because, of course, Madrid won't win the league now. This is the Copa del Rey semi-final second leg against
Barcelona. That's tomorrow.
And then Manchester United. That's tomorrow, and then Manchester United next week. And in the middle of those two, you've got a La Liga Clásico, which sort of doesn't matter. But I kind of, in a funny sort of way, because it's a Clásico, it will matter a bit. But I think we'll see them both rest relatively heavily in that game.
Really?
I think we might see the, to use a Spanish phrase, which they're quite fond of, the most decaffeinated Clásico for quite a long time.
Wow. Well, that's interesting, isn't it? But Barcelona, of course, coming into this run of games, as you say, their second leg against Milan will be the following week, in a bit of a state. They've conceded 11 straight games. They had to come back against Sevilla at the weekend. They were at home, weren't they?
Goals yeah, they were.
From Messi and David Villa at last. There's been that rumour again about the two of them not getting along, Sid.
Yeah, well, I mean, the statistics show that Messi only passed Villa the ball once at the weekend. Now, that in itself doesn't prove anything, because it can be mean all sorts of things to do with the position on the pitch, whether the passes were the right ones. It's not really a question of did he pass it to him. It's a question of did he pass up on the opportunity to pass to him at times when he should have done. But certainly there seems to be, I think it is true that there has been tension. But I don't know if that's quite the same as saying that there continues to be. I do think, though, tactically at least, that there is something problematic in playing everything through Messi in effectively, damaging is probably too strong a word, but I can't think of another one, affecting the game of other players because of that desire to make everything go through Messi. Now, when someone's that brilliant, then of course it makes a certain degree of sense. But in the Champions League and in big key games, it can, I think, on occasions come back and bite you. And there's a real feeling off this weekend, and again, it's knee-jerk, but there is a feeling that that David Villa played well enough that he should get a chance in the Champions League. I personally think he should be playing far more often anyway.
Absolutely. Still, Barcelona in a slightly tricky state, with their confidence certainly shaken as they head into this crucial fortnight of football.
If you don't mind me interrupting there, the way that it happened this weekend with them coming back, because I think re-infused them with a bit of confidence, because it's that sense of coming back within the game. Mm. But of course, that overlooks a really important point. They came back within the game and they won 2-1. Well, win 2-1 against Milan and they'll be out.
Yeah, absolutely. Win 3-1 against Milan and they'll be out.
And they'll be out, yeah.
Win 1-0 against Milan, they'll be out.
Have you got a little chart there, all the possible permutations?
No, he's not that professional.
Nope. I was quite happy to have got those two, to be fair. What else have we got, Sid? We've got Atletico Madrid bouncing back from being knocked out of the Europa League by Rubin Kazan with a 1-0 win over Espanyol in the... Well, what would you call this? If Real against Barcelona is the Clásico, what's Atletico against Espanyol then?
I suppose it's the other Madrid-Barca clash, but I can't think of a better name.
All right.
It doesn't have one of them.
Right.
There's also a huge difference, I think, in terms of the size of the two clubs. Atletico Madrid are much, much bigger than Espanyol in a way that there isn't between, obviously, Madrid and Barcelona. By the way, Espanyol are the club who historically have lost more First Division games than anyone else.
Really?
That's partly because they've got a very good record and have almost always been in the First Division without being a particularly good side in it.
Yeah.
That's quite a good one, that. Anyway, yeah, last night, Simeone really, really celebrated at full-time, I think, because he recognised it had been quite a difficult game. They weren't always brilliant, Atletico, but they're very, very tough. They've won every game at home in La Liga this season, plus one from the back end of last year, which I think makes it 14 wins out of 14. And I think they're now starting to take really, really seriously this possibility that they could finish ahead of Real Madrid in La Liga. There's still a Champions League, a Copa del Rey semi-final to come against Sevilla this week, the second leg, the same as Barca and Real Madrid. And they really battled for it last night. It's only the second time that Espanyol have been beaten under Javier Aguirre.
And Real Madrid won 2-1 away at Deportivo, and Kaká continues his incredible comeback.
And another resurrection for Kaká. I wonder how Kaká feels about people calling him the resurrection all the time, considering he's quite devout.
Right. Although
it's not really resurrection, it's more that this is a guy that hasn't had many chances, and when he's had chances, has tended to play okay, but it's tended to play okay in games that sort of don't matter. I still think with the ball at his feet, 20 yards out, no one in Spain shoots better than him.
Sid Lowe in Spain. Barry, here's something that you want to talk about. It's the Europa League last 16, and it doesn't feature Liverpool, even though they won 3-1 against Zenit. Zenit St. Petersburg.
Well, I think if anyone from UEFA hears what Brendan Rodgers had to say after the...
What did he say?
Well, he just spoke in such glowing terms of Liverpool's performance over the two legs that if anyone from UEFA heard it, they may mistakenly think Liverpool are still in the competition and put them into the quarterfinals.
Right. So Liverpool didn't go through, but he still spoke positively about...
Yeah. I mean, he's getting a lot of stick for some of his comments at the moment. Some of it's deserved, some of it isn't. But, his comments were very unusual. Admittedly, they won, but they just didn't do enough, and not enough players performed. Mm. Luis Suarez tried to single-handedly drag them through and couldn't, so fell just short. But you'd have to worry about Liverpool's chances of holding on to their little Uruguayan terrier in the summer.
I suspect
he'll be off.
Really?
Yeah.
I'm concerned about Brendan Rodgers' chances of filling those three envelopes the way everybody at Liverpool is doing so well. Who's he going to stick in there?
They're still to be filled, those envelopes, or did he fill them previously?
Oh, good Lord, of course he did. Of course he did.
Yeah.
Yeah, my mistake. Paul, you had something more pithy.
It's not pithy at all. I just thought, actually, Liverpool did play very well on the night, and they were undone by one horrendous error. But there was just... it was actually Rodgers' intervention at 3-1, where he brought on John Joe Shelby and I think it was Asaldi, changed the team around. The shape wasn't as good as it was. They lost the impetus and then didn't go on to score that fourth goal that looked very likely at that stage in the game.
Be funny if it was his name in the envelope.
Wouldn't it?
Wouldn't that be a twist, eh, at the end of the picture? Inter beat Cluj 3-0, then they faced Spurs in the last 16. Newcastle beat the amusingly entitled Metalist Kharkiv 1-0, and they'll be playing the similarly amusingly entitled Antsy Mashkashkala, I think. Chelsea have got Steaua Bucharest. Stuttgart are up against Lazio. Benfica Bordeaux. What do you think?
Some interesting ties there, and we give the Europa League a lot of stick because it is undeniably bloated and drawn and dragged out, but... once you get down to the business end, it's quite entertaining and something to enjoy.
Right, good. Anyway, that's coming up, next week, is it? Yep, next week. Good. Let's finish off today with the battle at the bottom. We asked what's beyond crisis. What's beyond last place in the Premier League? Because here's Harry Redknapp, after his 2-0 defeat against Man United, saying, well, there's no way we're going to be bottom at the end of the season. He's currently 6 points below second last Reading, who are only a point behind Villa and Wigan. And how's that work out then?
Well, I was there on Saturday.
Ooh.
He was talking about his plan, I guess, his great escape plan, which is to have Bobby Zamora and Loic Remy fit. But I think that's quite fanciful because Bobby Zamora, for the hour I think that he played, picked up a knock on his ankle. He apparently, as Harry revealed, has quite a bad hip injury, which needs an operation on. And it didn't look like Harry was going to take him off, which led you to believe that he wasn't totally convinced on Loic Remy's fitness. Although he said afterwards that the fitness coach has said, look, you can probably get half an hour out of him, but they didn't want to risk him because he's only just coming back from a groin injury. So in theory, if they can both be fit, then they might have a chance. But I think that's still very much a theory because they're both very injury prone. And he was basically saying how when he was at Portsmouth, he had a crap team, quote unquote.
Mm-hmm.
But their escape from relegation started later. It started in March. So that's But if you're pinning your hopes on Bobby Zamora and Loic Remy being fit, I think.
Mm.
Not good.
Yeah, I think they've got the next three games. They're playing teams in and around
Southampton next.
Yeah.
Ooh, that'll be a big game for him.
I think it will be. And
do you know what? That'll be an especially big day, not only for him, but also for Mauricio Pochettino.
Okay.
Because it'll be their birthdays and their meeting.
Oh, is that not?
Yeah.
That's unusual.
That's the amazing Bill Edgar in the Times pointing that one out.
That is a fantastic piece of work by Bill Edgar.
Mm.
But I think I think QPR need to win those three games just to be in the mix. And I think if they don't, then that's the game.
The maths don't really... They're really not in their favour. I mean, they're probably going to need 19 points from 13 games.
Mm.
That's like about 1.5 points a game.
I'll go along with that.
Not going to happen.
Mm.
I also think Reading might be in big trouble.
Oh, Reading, who got beat 3-0 at home by Wigan.
Yeah, they got turned around. I wonder whether they've done very well, but also maybe gotten a little lucky with all the late Adam Lafondre doubles, etc.
Right.
And next it's Everton away. Then they've got Villa at home, 9-pointer. But then they've got United and Arsenal. And after that, they've still got Liverpool and Man City to play.
Ooh.
I think to come out of those four games, you would expect them not to have a high points from those four games. And then they'd have to find form again very quickly to turn it around.
Mm. Now, Raphael's goal, that was a bit special, wasn't it, for Man United? Crikey.
He had an outstanding game. Goal line clearance. Cross for Van Persie, which he should have scored on the volley. He was United's best performance. So I found all of the plaudits for Giggs, it being what, his 999th or 1,000th first career appearance, whatever. But yeah, I think Raphael really deserved to be man of the match of that game, really.
Mm. All right. Then he also had two other amazing goals. Berbatov's against Fulham. Oh, sorry, against Stoke. Yeah.
Tekkers.
Yeah. Summed it up in that noise. And of course, Papi Cisse, who scored for me the goal of the season last season and came up with something quite special in the match there this time around. What was it, 4-2 against Southampton?
I haven't seen this goal. I heard it was superb. Well,
not as good as the Berbatov, perhaps.
This is kind of expected from Papis. It's like he has this sort of habit of scoring ridiculous sort of way, just for want of a better word. Well, let's
give a noise. Give it a noise, James. Yeah.
okay. But he hits across the ball. And, you know, I don't know, if he scored as many tap-ins as he did sort of goals like that.
He's what I like to call a scorer of great goals rather than a great scorer of goals.
Yeah, fun. A bit like Quagliarella.
Right.
There you go.
Yeah. He's up there in my favourite players.
Very nice pronounceable name.
Yeah. Lovely. Anyway, Newcastle are out of trouble. They beat Metalist. Everything's coming up roses for Alan Pardew and his Frenchy friends.
It was French Day at St James's Park.
It was. What was that all about?
I don't know. They played Le Marseillais.
Were they being sponsored by France or something? That's how it usually works.
They were just trying to turn the fact that they don't have any English players anymore into something of a virtue.
Right.
I suspect that what they're trying to do is poke fun at themselves, because if they do that, then others won't bother poking fun at them.
Really?
Yeah. Okay. It's a bit of sort of reverse psychology, I suppose, is it?
Good. Well, that's about it for this Football Weekly. Many thanks to Barry, to Paul, and to James and producer Ben, and you, listener. We'll be back on Thursday, so do join us then and have a super time. Until then.